Hello.
Hello, is this Rob Sheffield?
Yes, indeed.
Hello, sir. It's Michael Cirio from Philadelphia.
Thanks so much. It's good to talk to you.
So let me get the nerdy stuff out of the way first. I grew up reading Rolling Stone. I was the kid that would take the covers off and then make them into wallpaper. So just my whole room was nothing but Rolling Stone covers. And the way that I found out about music in high school and albums to listen to, because back then we didn't have Spotify and these things where you can just browse and kind of pick and choose what you want. You had to really be committed to buy an album. Like, there was no way to listen to it beforehand. You had to buy it, spend the whatever, $13 on it, and then get it home and hope that it was good. But the two ways that I found out about music that was good was, one, from CMJ used to put a sampler in their magazine every month, and I would listen to tracks on that. And the other was from reviews that you would write in Rolling Stone.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
And I was actually going back through your archives today, which you can do so on rollingstone.com, and looking at some of the stuff that you wrote about, like, around 2000, 2001. And I was like, oh, wow, yes, I totally read this. But now you're writing, and this is your third book now. You might know Rob from Love is a Mixtape or Talking to the Girls About Duran Duran. And the new one is called Turnaround Bright Eyes, The Rituals of Love and Karaoke. I mean, you can say it better than I can. Give me the reasoning behind the book.
Well, the beautiful thing about karaoke is it lets anybody participate in music, even those of us with no skill whatsoever. And that's, I guess, why I've become so fascinated with it. It's really just a book about my karaoke obsession.
But you used it kind of as a grieving tool at the same time, correct?
That is definitely true. It karaoke is something that, I mean, it gets into the deep connections between music and memory, and so it's a thing where you can have really strangely emotional experiences in the karaoke bar.
So, because you went through some personal tragedy and found karaoke and found that kind of as an outlet to get out there and, you know, not only get to perform some music, but also to just get yourself out of the house, I would imagine, too, and to meet some new people. Or was it something that you were into beforehand?
No, it was something that entered my life about, I guess, 12 years ago, just during a really low period in my life when I was in a new town. I was in New York. I was alone. I was had recently been widowed, and karaoke was something that was a reason to get out of the house and get up in front of people and make noise, which turned out to be something that I badly needed.
Yeah. Rob Sheffield joins us right now. The new book is called Turnaround Bright Eyes, The Rituals of Love and Karaoke. Tell me about your process as far as picking a karaoke song, because everyone has a different spin on it, how they do it. What's yours?
Well, it depends on the sort of karaoke and atmosphere and the sort of karaoke vibe that you're trying to create. But in general, it's best to stay away from songs that are too long or too sad. Or too slow is another thing. There was one place that I used to go. They said, we only have two rules. No American Pie, no Stairway to Heaven.
Yeah.
And they said, they're both great songs. They're too long and too sad.
I would throw Bohemian Rhapsody in there, too. As great of a song it is, it's really tough. And I've gotten roped into one of those performances before, and it's painful by the end. Like, there's a lot of fun stuff to do in Bohemian Rhapsody, but man, by the end of it, it's rough.
Yeah, a lot of Galileos in there.
I would say, too, there's certain unwritten karaoke rules, because I spend a lot of time doing karaoke, too. And I think, number one, it does depend on the scene, because there's different kinds of karaoke bars. There's the ones that are kind of slick and polished. Like, we have a place here called Yakitori Boy, which is, you know, it's all Japanese themed, and they have the karaoke, and they have the characters on the screen, and you're drinking Sapporo, and, you know, it has this kind of glossy finish to it. And then there's these grimy karaoke bars where it's just you and, like, seven other dudes. And those are the ones that I like.
Yeah. Yeah. I tend to like the really dingy, divey, sleazy karaoke places.
Yeah. And I would say, too, when picking a song, I tend to not go towards current popular songs. I feel like if you're going to sing something that is universally popular, like, I wouldn't go do Blurred Lines right now unless I knew I was going to kill it and I was going to Robin Thicke the hell out of it.
Well, I guess, like, a song that I like to just warm up with to sort of, like, sort of test out the room, I like to do the Commodores' Easy. and just, you know, like get my Lionel Richie on and just sort of, you know, get easy like Sunday morning and just kind of sort of take the temperature of the room.
And we're talking to Rob Sheffield right now, Turnaround Bright Eyes, The Rituals of Love and Karaoke. I've gotten really into doing Disney classics, like doing songs from, like, I'll do Part of Your World from The Little Mermaid, or I really like doing Circle of Life from The Lion King.
Wow, that's hardcore. I bet those go over really well.
It usually does, and it tends to borderline on screamo, which I leave it all out on stage.
Uh-huh.
But you're a music critic. Is there any better beginning to a Disney song than Circle of Life?
Well, that's up there. That's wow. But that's, and I guess that's, as Aladdin would say, a whole new world.
Right?
I've never tried any of those.
I'm telling you, try. Those are the ones that I feel like go over well. I think 90s nostalgia always works really well. I'm a big fan of doing Stay by Lisa Loeb.
Yeah, the 90s was just kind of a watershed for karaoke songs. There were so many good ones. It's funny. I was singing karaoke a few weeks ago, and a guy busted out the Verve pipe. Remember that song?
Yeah, totally.
And I was like, okay, this song has not crossed my mind in 15 years. I cannot believe somebody is going to try to do this one, because I just remember that song being like long, slow, endless.
Was there a dry eye in the house?
Everybody was singing along. It was a huge success.
Yeah, I'm sure. Totally sure.
I was like, I'll see your Verve pipe and raise you a primitive radio god.
Oh, you did Standing Outside a Phone Booth?
Yeah, that's always a good one.
See, but songs like that, like those are 90s songs that I love, but I need something that I can kind of get my teeth into. Because I can't sing. Like, I want to have something where I can just pour all the sweat into it.
So I like something like Flagpole Sitter by Harvey Danger.
That would be a great one. That's karaoke song.
Yeah, that's one of my go-tos. The night rarely ends without me, like, you know, busting out the, I'm not sick, but I'm not well, and I'm so hot because I'm in hell. That's one that people, it starts out, people think they don't remember it. Oh, people remember it.
Oh, totally. We're talking to Rob Sheffield right now. Turnaround Bright Eyes, The Rituals of Love and Karaoke. A karaoke question I have a lot when I'm in these different places, and I've seen it done before, and I grimace. Number one, I'm not a big fan of hip-hop karaoke in general, but I'm even less of a fan when a white guy gets up and does a hip-hop karaoke song and drops some N-words, and I don't know what the way around that is, but it's something I've always wondered about, and since you're writing a definitive book on karaoke, I guess I'll ask you.
I will always substitute another word, either baby or playa.
Playa?
Yeah. And you can always drop one of those two words in. There's kind of no excuse for that. But it's funny because different kinds of hip-hop songs work well in karaoke. I mean, some do and some don't. It's funny that people, I think in general, think it's easier to do than it is. I mean, it's really tough to rap, to speak with mentality, as Big Daddy Kane would say. It's just really, really difficult to hold the microphone and rap. And it's something that people sometimes, like, they'll start a song thinking it's going to be easy, and they'll get into it and realize how complex and fast-paced it is.
And there's a real train wreck potential to a hip-hop song, too. If you just botch a song because you're a bad singer, that's one thing. But the pacing of it just ends up disastrous a lot of times.
That is true.
The times when I've seen hip-hop done karaoke that is really funny, and I think this is a good rule as well, is when it plays against the stereotype of what you look like. Like, if you're a nerdy kid like myself with, you know, glasses and look very preppy, and I get up there and I do, you know, I do like some NWA or something, I think that works. Like, the same thing when you see a petite little mousy girl and she gets up there and does Ba with the Ba. Like, those are the moments in karaoke that I really enjoy.
Yeah, I know a girl who always does Big Papa by Biggie, and it's great because it's not what anybody would expect. I like to do the Nicki Minaj song, Bees in the Trap.
Okay.
Like, in addition to being one of the truly brilliant songs of the past 10 years, it's a Nicki Minaj song that's actually slow enough that you know, you can jump into it and rap along. That's one of my go-tos.
Well, that's another one. How many times have you seen someone murder Super Bass?
Yeah, that was just too hard to sing.
Yeah.
It's just too hard. Yeah. You have to be her.
I totally agree. Rob Sheffield, the book is called Turnaround Bright Eyes, The Rituals of Love and Karaoke. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you a little bit about the VMAs before I let you go. I read the piece on Miley this morning. What's your general take on her? Because there's a lot of people on both sides of it right now who think it's the coolest thing they've ever seen. And then there's some people that are disgusted, a la MSNBC and other talking head people.
I just thought it was, you know, it was hilarious. It's what a pop star does. And that's something I love about the VMAs, is when it's a celebration of pop music and its hilarious highs and equally hilarious lows. And so whether you think of Miley as one of those highs or those lows, it was a truly great Video Music Awards moment, in my opinion.
The great thing about the Miley performance is when she first comes out and all the bears are dancing around on stage and she's kind of limping through her own song, I was like, oh no, because I've been a big fan of Miley this year. And then I
love that song.
I do too. And I think she did the only thing that she could do, which is turn the crazy up to 11 when Robin Thicke comes out, and I think she saved it. Like, I was very nervous for her and almost embarrassed a little bit for her, but then when she got kind of crazy with the foam fingers, when I go, okay, you're totally nuts, this is awesome.
Yeah, also I kind of hate that Robin Thicke song, so I love that she, like, clearly just made him, like, really uncomfortable and humiliated. I was like, yeah, you can't rise to that level, can you, dude?
Rob Sheffield, Rolling Stone, you can check out his work. Also, the new book, Turnaround Bright Eyes, The Rituals of Love and Karaoke. I really appreciate taking some time this morning, man.
Thank you so much for talking with me. Thanks for reading back in the day.
Yeah, absolutely. Keep up the good work.
Thank you so much. You too, my man. So
all
good
right.
To talk to you.
Be good.